Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 163. This is a show about Linux, all sorts of Linux news, tips, all sorts of Linux things that we find when we share with you. We just bring it to the show, and by we, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and my good friend, the Door to Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cody. Good, but not good enough. I'll say that. I tried twice, and I could not get the correct cable to connect my phone to my second computer to do the Insta Radio streaming, audio stream of the live show. I didn't realize I needed what's called a 3-ring 1/8-inch jack. And I played with it for a couple days until Steve Trevino called me an idiot and said, it will never work. You only have 2 rings on that plug. And I looked at the plug and I said, I see 3 pieces of silver separated by 2 things of black. He said, yeah, well, the rings are the black lines. You only have 2 of them. You need 3 of them. Oh, okay. And then he showed me a link and I said, okay. Went to 2 places. They didn't have it. So I'm going to try again to have that by next week. If that is successful, which I really do suspect it will be, I don't know how much longer we're going to be on Google Plus Hangouts. I'll say that. Mm.
Did you happen to check for the cable at podnest.com/Amazon?
I did, but I was trying to get it in person because I didn't find this out until Friday.
Oh, okay. All right. I was just saying, you know, because they have a lot of stuff there.
They do. They have a heck of a lot of stuff.
And if you had purchased that cable, a small amount of your purchase would have gone to help the Podnest Network, and you don't even have to, you know, do any extra work. You just go to podnest.com/Amazon instead of Amazon, and then
I know, but it's technically against policy if I use it for myself.
Oh, right, yeah. So maybe everybody else but the two of us.
I'm being a good boy is all I can say. I'm trying to be a good boy.
Okay, all right, there you go. I just thought I'd bring that up. I know Steve would ask you this if he was here, but did you try your local Walmart?
Hell no, I didn't try no Walmart.
Good for you. Okay.
Go to Walmart. I don't go to Walmart unless I absolutely have to. Period.
I went to Walmart recently because I needed a pair of pants at 3 o'clock in the morning. And while I was there, I bought a lot more than pants.
I bet. Got like a 55-inch TV for like $300.
No, but yeah, they did have that discount rack. I did. Yeah, I don't want to get into it. It's anyhow. So a lot of cool little stories popped up this morning in all my feeds, and I was kind of serendipitous that they happened to just happen today, so we could bring them onto the show.
If you say so, I'm completely blind because I'm always so far behind in my RSS feeds. I never look at the dates of what I'm clicking on. So what I'm clicking on could be from this morning, or it could be from 3 months ago, maybe. Just to show you how much I'm attuned to what's going on.
I just check. I kind of glance at the first couple of pages really quick because if you get a day or two behind, or like a week behind, like I was recently, you can go back and start to, you know, bookmark and pocket stuff, but man, just clear the chute, move on.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say one of the first thing I wanted to mention, of course, is thinkpenguin.com coupon codes. I know I have one email in my inbox I've got to get to send him a coupon code, but I have plenty of more coupon codes. Again, I just want to state, not getting paid for this. Not getting bonuses for this, not getting products for this, not getting mentions for this, not getting SEO for this. I'm not getting anything for this. Anything. Unlike a huge majority of the other shows out there that only seem to highlight someone in this type of manner when money's changing hands. I try to support those who support the community in general, not just my own bank account. Chris over at Think Penguin, I think, is doing a stellar job, and it needs to be recognized. And be quite honest, the easiest way to show him recognition is to give him money. I am currently saving up money in the Podnuts bank account because I really would like to buy one of his computers. I'm not sure if it's going to be a laptop or a desktop, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be one of them here soon. But you betcha I'm going to use a Podnuts coupon code for that. So if you want to look at Think Penguin, give him a shot, save a little bit of money, and just let him know that Podnuts is supporting him. Email me, podcast@linuxfortherestofus, and I'll be happy to ship you one of those coupon codes.
There you go. And in the meantime, go to thinkpenguin.com and check out their large selection of computers, whether they be mobile or desktop editions or the micro desktops, which are also the ones I was interested in. So yeah, very, very good company, doing a lot of good for the community, and we're glad to help our listeners find their products and potentially hook them up with a good deal to get a new machine.
Yes, and I will say today's show is quite normal as far as this show goes. And what I mean by that is, A, we're never normal, but B, we've had a lot of...
It's all over the place.
It's all over the place. But we've had a heck of a lot of Raspberry Pi stuff. And here's the thing. It's been out for well over a year. Well over a year for a product that people said is too underpowered, it's too this, it's too that, and gave all kinds of excuses on why it wouldn't be successful and why it's stupid. I've heard many people just claim how stupid it is and how pointless it is.
Yeah. Only hobbyists will buy it. It'll never hit mainstream. Yada, yada, yada.
Exactly. And fine. If that's what they want to believe, fine. But there's no doubt in my mind, if I had an entrepreneurial spirit and I had time on my hands, you betcha I'd be selling the Raspberry Pi in a enclosed case with customized software on it, performing a specific task, selling it as a appliance. And there's a little doubt in my mind, there are plenty of people already doing that all across the world. So most of the links on tonight's show is going to be Raspberry Pi focused, even though it's old, it's small, it's pointless, it's useless, it's underpowered, it's weak, all this kind of malarkey, baloney, if you will. And the
Hogwash, foolishness.
Boulder Dash, even.
Well, yeah, no, you beat me to it. It's a good board game, too.
I want to say I learned the true meaning of that word from Penn & Teller BS, their series on Showtime. By the way, if you have not sat down and watched Penn & Teller, I implore you to get drunk or inebriated before you do. It just seems better if you do that. First link here is actually from Honky Magoo. Honky Magoo is one of those extremely cool guys who I've personally let down in the past. He let me know I let him down in the past, but he's still okay with me. And that's why he gets an extreme tip of the hat, because he really liked the show I was on with Tracy Holtz called Pod Brewers, all about brewing beer and all the finer points about the history of beer, the chemistry of beer, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Keep talking.
I know, but... me and Tracy both moved on. I couldn't afford to keep up buying beers at that rate, so I'm drinking water right now. But Honky Magoo once in a while shoots me a really good link, and this is the kind of link that I love, because he literally said in the email something to the effect of, I'm sure you heard of this, but I found a good use for it, to which I clicked it, and I said, no, I never heard of this dude. Me and him tried for months to get OwnCloud on the Raspberry Pi. That was easy, but to not get it to run slow and sluggish, okay? We knew what our network speeds were. We knew what our throughput was. We knew what the syncing speed should have been. We never got close to that. And then when you hit the PHP web interface, it was extremely slow. So either the Raspberry Pi wasn't powerful enough to host OwnCloud, or more than likely, OwnCloud was not optimized for a super extremely thin server. That's the way I look at it. So he pinged me on this literally hours ago, so I haven't had a chance to play with it. But I will tell you this. I don't want to say he's a particular fellow, but there's no doubt in my mind he expects top-notch results when he tries something. That's why when he says this is working very good for him for months, there's no doubt in my mind it's going to go on my Raspberry Pi, and it's called C-File. S-E-A-F-I-L-E, and it's basically next generation open source cloud storage that you can self-host. Once I saw self-hosted servers, done. I don't need to hear anything else. Time for me to try it. You can also get a Amazon EC2 instance of it very quickly and easily at ccloud.cc. They also have an open source edition and a professional edition. So they're very early making the point that we're going to have two different versions, which I'm very okay with. I will say that. I'm very okay with it. The community edition does have a majority of all of the features, which I like. It isn't like it only has two features and the pro has everything else. More than half of the features are available in the free version. And he stated everything he was wanting and needing to do, he could do with the free version. So. Honky giving this a thumbs up enables me to give it a go.
But, well, first of all, yes, I second everything. And Honky's great, great guy. He looks a little underfed. I'll say that. I'll be sure to hang with him next year, and we'll go sandwich shopping. But I mean, he's pretty tall too. Maybe it's just more of a perspective thing based on my poor vision. But anyway, the free is a full gig of storage, 5 gigs a month traffic, and then no limit as far as number of groups or group members. But the up from that, $10 a month, you go to 100 gigs of storage and 50 gigs worth of traffic. So $10 a month, especially if you're considering doing a lot with this, or maybe having a small team to share this. I mean, that's just, you know, that's peanuts, basically. So yeah,
those prices seem very fair, and I think more importantly to a lot of people, competitive for what you're getting. I'll say that
exactly. Yeah.
And I'll state, I don't care if this is a fork of OwnCloud, because I mean, it's good. I'm still going to play with it. I'm still going to try it. The beautiful thing, even if it is a fork, I'll say, which I don't think it is, but even if it is a fork, that's life. May the better man win. Ding, ding, ding. Round one. Go at it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's plenty of room in this space, to be honest, for both of them to survive and be around. I guess it was the last episode I brought a link about OwnCloud and the founder. I'm not sure. Because I know I had a book.
Yeah, was that one of the one before?
Okay. Okay, then in that case, we had big news today with the Raspberry Pi itself. We've actually seen four different Raspberry Pis. Today was the fourth one was announced. First, you had the one with 256 megs of RAM. Then you had the one with 512. The 512 came with and without Wi-Fi, the two different versions. And now there's the... I want to say they call it the Raspberry Pi B Plus, I believe it was called, where they basically bumped up the Raspberry Pi with, to be honest, one of the things that I keep seeing in the picture, and it looks like they actually finally added maybe a power button.
Really?
Because I keep seeing a black dot on the what looks like the same side as the HDMI port. And I keep thinking that's a power button. I'm not sure. But they basically redid...
Oh, no. That's audio jack.
Sticking up for the... Okay. Because they did do basic reconfiguration. They basically took the board and they moved stuff around, which means none of your old cases will work 100%. Because A, they added two more USB ports. But they also changed the interface for the quote-unquote hard drive from a full-size SD to a micro SD. Which I will say is about time. I personally am a fan of that, 100%. And I will say, I think they also moved the placement of the power plug too. So whole new cases, that's fine. Just another chance to support other companies making cases. And yeah, this is the B Plus. More USB ports. They've improved the hot plug and overcurrent performance of the GPIO. Sure, yeah. Period. It's an upgrade. If you didn't get a Raspberry Pi, or one of the things that was making you hold back was the fact that it only had two USB ports on board, well, you no longer have that excuse. You know, jump on it.
Yeah, I mean, you could always get a powered hub and do that anyway. But I must say that right out of the box, I mean, here's the thing, and I don't know if you mentioned this already. I mean, obviously, all the tweaks here were for very good reasons. Some aesthetic, some function, especially the USB ports and the micro USB slot. It also has four mounting holes now instead of two, so it'll be more stable if you're actually utilizing all four holes to mount it onto or inside of something. But yeah, having the extra USB ports, it really does make it a full-blown computer, because now you can do keyboard, mouse, external drive, and Wi-Fi adapter on one device without having to shell any more money.
Right.
And speaking of money, it's still only $35.
Thank you. I knew I was forgetting some key part of it. Same friggin' price.
Okay? Yeah.
This is why I like the Raspberry Pi organization, period. I don't care if the guy behind it has connections or he's in part of a company that does closed-door stuff. This he's doing right. This is obviously not a profit-motivated endeavor, because the first chance he got, he would have been jacking the price and jacking the price. He's not. He's keeping it conservative. I can't say it enough. I think it's painfully obvious this guy wants to do what's good, not what's good for his bank account, per se. Or directly, I'll say that. Yeah, I'm probably going to get one, but only after I find a good case, because I'm not going to lie to Russ, it might take you 6 months to listen to this show, but I know you're listening. Mm-hmm. Russ Winter, the Techie Geek. You, my sir, God bless you. You spoiled me. You spoiled me pretty ridiculous to where I do not want a Lego case. I do not want a flimsy case. I do not want a plasticky, fragile, brittle case. I want a zombie-killing machine metal box that I could run over it with an 18-wheeler and the box would laugh. I don't want no plasticky junk. So I'm going to get one of the new Raspberry Pis for a couple of reasons. One, I have the original with half the RAM, so I need the bigger one. But I just want to support these guys. I want these guys to keep moving forward, keep doing better, keep putting as many of these things out there in as many different cultures, economic classes, and regions of the world they can possibly be. The more, the better. I'll just say that.
Yep. Lots of good cases existing for the first two models anyhow. I mean, lots of really good super protective ones, much like the one that we were alluding to. Schematics for paper and or like poster board or cardboard ones. The Lego, of course, very cool. So, yeah, I'm utilizing one, soon to be two Raspberry Pis at work for some particular tasks, and I may end up. I have some people coming in to take a look at my configuration, and they may actually want to get some details and then roll that into a future project. So I'm going to try to get a couple more and really show them what I can do with them.
My logic is they're perfect appliance devices, one-off appliance devices. Yeah, and the case that we got was from Cook Tech Inc. If you just go on eBay and search for COOKTECHINC, you'll see, can't miss it, metal case. Whenever they mention the gauge metal, since I don't understand any of that, I think that's pretty thick. Because if you're going to mention it, it's pretty thick. If it's pretty thin, you're not going to mention the gauge, because then the people who know will avoid you. So they're easy enough to find. There'll definitely be a link to that in the show. But I will say I saw another case, and for some reason my Google thought I said, okay, Google. There's another case I stumbled across that made me, I would love to be carpenter-like in talents and abilities, because I would make this thing, but I'm not, so I can't, but I would pay someone else to do this over at instructables.com. If you don't know instructables.com, think of it as Etsy for computer people and hackers, where you can tell you step by step on how to do things. There's more than a couple things on the site that are just dumb and useless and worthless and not worth your time, but there's more than a couple fantastic gems that you can make, and they give you all of the layouts, step by steps, and everything else. And this one's called the Raspberry Pi Pirate Box. This is a 21-step or 21-page how-to. I heavily encourage you go to like BugMeNot or something and get a login credential if you want. Just log in and look at all the steps at once to get the PDF, because you don't want to literally click next through 21 steps. But I think personally, this is a pretty dang cool box. And near the end, they tell you the step-by-step-by-step commands to type in to get yourself a light HTTP server running on it and some kind of a chat room. I want to say it's a Jabber chat room, but I can't remember. So not only do they tell you how to make an epic-looking case called the Pirate Box with nice skull and crossbones on it, but custom LEDs inside, and then they give you the links to all the software and all the commands you have to type in order to get the software up and running. This is a labor of love, is all I can say.
Oh, yeah. This does look very cool. And, yeah, and here's the thing, too. When you think of Raspberry Pi case, traditionally, most people think, oh, a case for the Raspberry Pi, meaning just enough size and dimension to cover the Pi itself. But then you get stuff like this, and some cases made that will, like they have cases that accommodate a space for you to slide the little the camera attachment into and make it into like a cool little camera box. You know, we've seen there was that that Raspberry Pi with the phone, and then the Raspberry Pi, the little micro laptop thing. So yeah, very very cool to see something. And this too, this looks beefy, you know, a little more hefty than just a tiny little plastic deal. So yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, it's definitely physically bigger than your normal Raspberry Pi case, but I'll just say like this. It comes with tail fins, like Leo Laporte would say, you know, back in the day, we wanted cars with tail fins on them just because tail fins are cool. This box is definitely a little bit bigger. And by a little bit bigger, I mean like three times bigger than a Pi, but it also has extra functionality and extra quote unquote fashion because you have the extra lights in it, but it also has a power button on the side. The one fatal flaw, in my humble opinion, for the Raspberry Pi usability out of the box is to power on and power off. Sometimes you literally have to go over to it, pull the power plug, and put the power plug back in. Yeah. Nothing's perfect. It's only $35. Okay. Right now, what I'm currently using my Raspberry Pi for, I've talked about a couple times. Well, someone actually went and documented the process to me pretty good. And I can't pronounce the guy's name. Thorin Kolinsky something. Over on lifehacker.com. The link is how to build a all-in-one retro gaming console for $35 the easy way. They go through literally step by step by step on what you need. Well, they first explain it, which, to be honest, I like, but for me, I don't need it because I went and did the research myself in the operating system. But it basically tells you, like, the back end is emulation. The front end is emulation station. The back end is RetroArch in combination with custom configuration files. You have RetroPi, which is a custom Raspberry Pi distribution or installation script for the Debian-based Raspberry Pi to where, voila, bada bing, you have yourself what appears to be a micro standalone arcade all-in-one cabinet. And I just think it's cool.
Yeah, it's just, dude, if 20 years ago you told, you know, my, what, 13-year-old self, hey, you're going to be able to carry out all these systems in your pocket. I'm like, dude, whatever. Yeah. And you pull out a Raspberry Pi, plug it into a TV. Okay, I'd have to have an HDMI to, you know, AV converter as well. Otherwise, I couldn't prove it to my younger self.
Well, see, I have the original Pi that does have RCA video out. I believe it's video.
Oh, duh. Yeah, mine does. Yeah, okay.
So technically, we could have used that. You'd have stared at the other plug a while, to which we would have just told you to stop looking at it.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I will say, I don't want to say this is misleading. Okay, I really don't. But my Raspberry Pi, half the RAM, I cannot run any N64 game. Any. I literally load the game, and it takes 5+ minutes for the screen to show anything. And then when the screen shows something, I literally have, like, you know how you have 30 frames a second, 60 frames a second? I literally have, like, one frame every 8 minutes. Now, it might be because I have the original Pi with half the RAM, but I'm seriously doubting that's the case. So while they list all these emulators, yes, they're all on there, but I don't think they're all playable. And some of them require extra work, like the in television does require you to get two files on your own. Like, remember the old Doom things we had to do to get Doom working? We had to get the WAD files.
Right.
You have to get a bin file, and I can't remember what the second file is, but you have to get those two files yourself. You put them in the right directory, and then your Intellivision, quote-unquote, works. So,
okay,
it isn't perfect. Nothing is, but it is a super great jumpstart to giving you a $35 gaming rig. What I didn't see, though, and I was really hoping, was suggested game. Yeah, they do actually link to a Super Nintendo game controller over on Amazon. They look like they go for, now this is the corded kind. I'm not going to say don't believe these guys, but I know a couple people who bought Super Nintendo USB game controllers off of Amazon.com, and they hate them. They say how bad they are.
I bought a couple of these myself. I'll give you a little micro review. when we had Chad Wallenberg on from milesofgaming.com. Right. The server show.
Good bad.
At Podnuts. I almost asked.
I was going to let you have a try, too.
No, I almost asked, what's the name of our server show again? I literally did.
Nice.
Anyway, okay, all right. Yeah. Anyway, I'm anything. If anything, I'm totally honest. But I try to listen to that show, man, and my eyes just start. I start crying. It hurts my brain.
I know how I feel.
Because it could be,
and I'm on
because
it.
It's so packed with good information.
Well, no, because it's so far above my head, I barely can.
It
I'm
is.
Like with my it's fingertips good. Barely holding on.
And that's just because of the good content in the show. It's not because it's boring. It's fantastic. And Chad's a great guy. But anyway, he has this other podcast called Miles of Gaming. He talks about gaming with his son, Miles. Very appropriate. And when we had him on here last, he suggested that we buy these if we were to try USB gaming with a controller. And I will say that these are made by Tomy. It's $9 and change, like nine and a quarter for these. It's the exact same physical shape as the original Super Nintendo Entertainment System controller. The gist of these is that they're all right. They're super light. I mean, if you've ever held an SNES controller, you have an expected weight of it. And you get this thing, and it's literally just a tiny shell as far as the weight goes. So you crack it open, you put some weights in there, which I've done for other controllers just to make it feel, because the whole time I'm holding it, I'm just like, it just doesn't feel right, you know? The buttons and the responsiveness are quite good. The only caveat I would say to these is that the start and select buttons are also hard plastic, and they're not rubber like the original controllers are. So it's a little odd. But if you're giving this to a kid who's never even held the original, right. he'll never right. know any of the he or she will never know any of these things. So
right. And the two things I'll say is the one that Liam Tidwell gave me, which looks just like this one. I don't know if it's the same one. The L and the R buttons. They don't have like the click. They don't have the give before the click. It's just like a squish.
Right.
And I will say the link from Lifehacker, it lies. The item lies. Requires PC running Windows 98 SE or later or Mac OS X running 10.0 or later. I call again Balderdash runs in Linux. Period. And I don't like him not saying it, but you know,
Well, but then again, look at the screenshots.
Yes, I did notice them.
So we'll just leave that right
there.
Yeah,
they're not too,
friendly.
Yes. Okay, now I'm going to be able to put C5 on my Raspberry Pi with only having one.
What?
Well, that's because I'm taking RetroPie off of that Raspberry Pi. How can I do that? Why can I do that? Why would I do that? Am I a sadist? Do I want to just cause myself pain? No, because I found something else that maybe can run my Super Nintendo just fine, and that is Retro Rig. Okay, Retro Rig looks like, instead of a emulation station plus Retro Arch, I believe, I haven't looked into it incredibly hard because I haven't had the time, but I believe it's a combination of Retro Arch and XBM. And a very customized XBMC interface, okay? Ooh. Right. Now, what I mean when I say that is you can load XBMC, and you can load a plugin, and then you have to configure the plugin, and then you'll get the exact same interface. The difference is there's no main screen on the XBMC. It just drops you right into the games, and I believe it does automatic scanning of the game ROMs, but also, just like in RetroPie, there is a script file you can run that will give you a ncurses DOS type interface to where you can very easily enable or disable SSH, enable or disable Samba sharing, enable or disable the game pads and all this kind of stuff. But it's geared for a x86 computer. So you can put this on a full functioning desktop computer. Now they are showing it running on Ubuntu 14.04, the YouTube video. I'm going to put the link in. But I also believe this is not 32-bit compatible. I believe this is only 64-bit compatible. So this is one reason I've been using computers for all these years. This is the first genuine bona fide reason I have to run a 64-bit operating system. I'll say it. I don't care.
You can do it, man. Come on.
I will. But I'm going to put this on the Intel NUC that I have. Intel NUC, smaller form factor, just like the Think Penguin microcomputer, same exact form factor, microcomputer, not completely quiet, but quieter than a full desktop computer. Small form factor, not bright, fancy, crazy lights, not crazy, weird shape and design, but a box I could easily put up on top of the television set, walk up and go bang, hit power button, and then connect my Bluetooth PS3 controller up to it, and then hopefully play some Super Nintendo on the TV when the wife is in bed or at work and the kids are asleep or in school. Because any other time, I don't have any control over the TV set. Mm. I got no problem admitting that. But so there's going to be three links for the retro rig in the notes. One is to the YouTube video. One is to the LibraGeek.org homepage. And then one is to the GitHub repo. If you go to that GitHub repo page, tab down a couple times, they give you full instructions on how to get this installed on Ubuntu 14.04. Now, I will say, if you decide to keep the Unity interface, I cannot encourage you enough. Go to Unity, hit the Windows key, APPE, go down to a Appearance, and make sure you hide the Unity bar, or else you're going to have the ugly Unity bar sticking out like a sore thumb when you're in the XBMC interface. I'm just saying, that's me. I personally would hide that. And once the XBMC interface loads, you can use your gamepad to do all the controlling through the screen and picking the game and playing the game.
Very cool. Yeah, man, I cannot wait to dig into this some more.
Okay. Yeah, just really quick to CitizenX Barb in the chat room. Why am I shunning 64-bit? And my answer reply is, why not? Why is it needed? I have multiple computers with 32-bit OSs, which can utilize up to 82 or 84 gigabytes of RAM. I'm not doing insane cipher block chaining calculations of man on the moon to the next five stars out kind of thing. I'm doing normal everyday desktop things. The advantage to 64-bit over 32-bit is immeasurable for the most case, and you lose out, in fact, because there's at least historically more 32-bit geared software than 64-bit software. I know that tide is shifting and changing and turning, so I know it's inevitable, but right now it's still not a must, so I don't have an option for it. It just seems to cause more problems. Okay, now I'm a big fan of OwnCloud. And I liked how they're putting stuff out there and explaining how and why they do what they do. Well, the guys from Docker did the same thing, okay? If people out there don't know about GigaOm, I cannot encourage you guys enough. Om Malik was a guy who's been around forever, okay? He knows more about the industry of computing, whether it's ISP, fiber stuff, hardware stuff, software stuff, enterprise stuff, entrepreneur stuff, whatever. He knows a little bit about everything, if not a lot about everything. He built this network called GigaOm. Some of the best and smartest stuff I've seen have been on that site. They try to do a good job, and I think they're learning all from him on how to do stuff. Well, there's an article over on GigaOm called How Docker is Trying to Avoid the Dreaded Fork and Getting Ahead of Itself Again. And I read that headline and I said, what do you mean again? So I clicked the link and I scroll and I see text and I scroll a little bit more and I see text and I scroll a little bit more and I see text and my head starts to hurt a little bit. Now, granted, this isn't pages and pages of text. I scroll slowly. And then I scroll down a little bit further and I see the structure show. What? The structure show. And then I look a little bit more. GigaOm hosts not only news articles, but podcasts. And one of the podcasts is called The Structure Show, where they basically sit down with developers and CIOs and entrepreneurs, and they talk about business. So I found another podcast to subscribe to. And to be honest, I don't mind supporting GigaOm. I personally like Om Malik, and I like what he does. So I immediately subscribed, downloaded, listened to the show. He gives some very interesting insight, I will say that, to the origins of Docker, how it's evolved so far, where he sees it going, and how they're trying to do it at a very methodical pace. They're trying to not let things get out of hand, which I think is hard to do, but I think these guys are doing it right so far, at least.
Well, good. Yeah. I've been floated links to that site every now and then, but I didn't know they hosted podcasts either.
Yeah. That was a great find. And I'll say I'm happy to see the guy behind Docker has a beard. That's a plus. I'm just saying. He has a beard. Immediately makes me want to like him. And I will say, if you go to gigaohm.com/podcast, you'll see all of their podcasts. This is one thing, is a pet peeve. What I don't like is the fact that they at least make it look like, I haven't tried, to go to gigaohm.com/thestructureshow. Instead, I go to gigaohm.com/podcast, and then I see the Structure Show, the Chrome Show, the Internet of Things Show, Cord Cutters. So I subscribe to a couple GigaOhm podcasts.
And by a couple, you mean all of them?
Not the Cord Cutters, because it looks like a video-only show. But yes, yes, I did. Because, hey, Chrome, to me, is not only a browser that has exploded and basically taken over the market for good reason, I'll say, but a very interesting operating system, because I'm sure they're going to bounce back between both of them. And then you have the Chromecast, which technically is Android, but it's called Chromecast. So it could be all of those things. The Internet of Things show, I want to subscribe to just because I hope they're fair and balanced about security and convenience, and how when someone's successful and they balance that line good, and then the ones that don't, and they point it out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Only one way to find out. Why don't you just go get caught up on all of them and then give some micro report on the next episode?
If I can listen to all of them by then, because now I believe I'm above 90 podcasts. Okay. Totally different direction. And by that, it's not only the truth, but it's a pun. This is an article I'm calling out for Rich, Flying Rich, which I don't know why we call him Flying Rich, where we need to call him Bullet Rich. Because he's one of the guys that seems to get tingly when people talk about guns. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. I'm interested in guns, but I'm not, infatuated with them, I guess I'll say. Now, anyone can carry one legally, fine by me, don't care. I just don't have any. Why? Because I know I'd shoot somebody, and I don't want to let myself do that. But there's an article on TheVerge.com, which there's no doubt in my mind when he sees it and when other people I know see it, they're going to react to it. And it's entitled, Watch Smart Bullets Change Direction in Mid-Air. This is sci-fi, folks, okay? And I'm going to say it's running Linux. Tracking port rifles are rifles that are running Linux. And DARPA, Defense something, 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 is investing time, research, money, resources into Exacto, E-X-A-C-T-O, Extremely Accurate Task Ordnance. Okay, this is an example, I'll say. Linux software and hardware is not good or bad. It just is. And to be quite honest, guns are not good or bad. They just are. This is really interesting technology. No matter what you think about guns, no matter what you think about bullets, no matter what you think about gun shooting bullets, really, really interesting technology. Stuff that was only science fiction last week, I'll say, is now at least in some proof of concept real. And they have a video of a bullet changing direction in midair.
That's pretty crazy. I gotta ask though, because if this is not the case, it's far too coincidental. It's hitting a little too close to home here. But did you read about this from Matthew Williams this week on Google Plus?
Nope.
Well, he must have posted something similar then, because when I first saw this, I thought of the 1980s sci-fi extravaganza Runaway, starring Tom Selleck and Gene Simmons.
What? Oh my lord! You're going way back.
Have you seen it?
I don't know.
Oh my god, dude. To this day, it's just one of my favorite. Like, I don't, everybody has those movies those films in their life where, like, if it just, like, well, it can't happen in this day and age where you walk in, it's just on TV, because I'm a cable cutter, so I don't walk in, oh wait, it's on cable today. But man, if I flip through and I see that on Netflix, I'm just like, okay, I'm dropping whatever I'm doing for 90 minutes and I'm watching that movie. But in it, quick synopsis, Tom Selleck plays this robot, or yeah, I guess is a robot, sort of a tactical expert, Ramsey, in the film. And he's this cop that basically, when it's far in the future, you know, probably like, you know, 1999 or whatever. And there are all sorts of house robots and all this, but if any of them go haywire, he's the guy that's sent in by the yes. cops to go, you know, disable these robots.
I do remember the movie, yes.
Yeah. So, but Gene Simmons leads their kiss, of course, he's the villain in the film, and he's just amazing. Just such a ham. The whole film's great. But in it, they have this gun that fires these bullets, and they actually track, and they use cool camera effects to show the bullets moving around. But, I need to stop talking about it, because I will talk about Runaway for a whole 90 minutes, but that just makes me want to, I don't even want to say that. Okay. Yeah, so well, go check out
Runaway. And I will say Matthew Williams, Lord D, did post the exact same story earlier this week. I did not catch it. I've been a little Google Plus inept this week. I will not lie. So he does get credit for saying this publicly before me, but I hope Richard didn't see it. I hope Richard Hughes doesn't hear about this until he hears this show, because then.
But more importantly, I was right.
I'm not gonna. I cannot confirm nor deny that. So either way. No matter what, I just got to tell people. And listen, I know I've said this 100 times at least. This is not a Microsoft gun. This is not an Apple gun. Why? Because only Redmond, Washington, or whatever the other city is where Mac is, if it didn't come out of there, those companies can't be behind it. Okay? Because it is Linux, because it is open, because it is free, because it is modular, means anybody can do it. It didn't have to be the US DOD and DARPA doing this. This could have been anybody doing these kind of things. All it takes is effort and a little bit of time. And if it is plausible in any shape, way, or form, you're going to find a way to do it. And it wouldn't shock me if open source tools can help you get there quicker. They didn't have to design an entire operating system. They use Linux. So, you know, go figure. Okay, now we're back on GigaOm, because it didn't make sense to put this link before that one. But we're back on GigaOm. And coincidentally, if you go down in the article a little bit, there's a link to the Chrome show, which if I would have listened to the Chrome show, I would have already known about this before I saw the link and didn't even. Now I know there's a podcast, so I'll subscribe to that one too.
Hey, just stop beating yourself up, okay?
Well, and I hope the Linux community stops beating Google up for a couple seconds, okay? Because, and I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but I will say it like this. Everyone keeps going crazy over there's no native Google Drive on Linux. First off, I'll say, why do you feel like you need to rely on a company to put out a piece of software? There's plenty of pieces of software on Linux you can load that can access Google Drive, that can save revisions, that can sync, that can download, that can upload. Why do you feel it necessary you must rely on that company for that product? I don't understand you people, period. Now, while you're over there complaining about a tool that would be redundant in the world, I'm over here talking about Google released the Chrome Remote Desktop on Linux. About a month and a half ago, they released this tool to where you could do Chrome Remote Desktop. Okay. Now, if we were both in Google Hangouts, you could do a remote desktop and it would work. But they released a Android application like a month ago. From your Android phone, you could remote into your computer via the Chrome browser and remote control that computer. It didn't work on Linux. Now it does. Released, I believe, today, July 13th. They just released this in the beta stages. So it's only a matter of time, a little bit of time, to where if I need to remote into my computer, all I have to do is leave my Chrome up and running with a secure access token with a handshake already done kind of thing. Otherwise, you need to be sitting in front of the computer and literally authenticate via a code. You have to hit OK kind of thing. But I do believe you can do just leave your Chrome up and running and leave it unsupervised and get in. That, to me, is the type of simplicity only somebody with a lot of money behind them would even think about doing, because this is no cost. This is free. This is out there. You can say this just lets you Google into your house, whatever, blah, 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 whatever. Chrome is already the most popular browser, period. I already use it. in certain computers. So now if I can take advantage of this on my Google phone to my Chrome browser on my desktop, makes me happy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's in beta support, but you should be able to access it. I will say that.
I'll definitely give it a try.
Yeah, and in the podcast, the guy explains how he can access his Raspberry Pi. So basically, he gets Chrome on his Raspberry Pi, and then he can remote into it from over the internet. That's just cool.
There you go. That's awesome.
Okay. Last thing I wanted to mention, I don't read a lot. Everyone knows that. But I also read a lot of comics, kind of thing, of any kind. I'm more probable of reading a flow chart, a logical diagram, or something that can help me better understand something than I am web comics. But I saw this, and I will say it piqued my interest. The guy named David Revoy, R-E-V-O-Y, on Google+, link in the notes, announced he's going to do a open source web comic. And I just literally stopped and said, what? An open source web comic? How? What? What would make, I couldn't even truly comprehend what would make it an open source web comic. I had to literally sit down and think about it a little bit. So I'm fairly sure of where this guy is going to go with this. And if you go to the show notes, you'll get a link to his Google+ posting about this, but you can also get a link to his posting on his personal website, davidreverly.com. And it's called Pepper and Carrot, which is misleading because it's not a comic about vegetables. It's a comic about a witch, a girl witch, a young girl witch, and her cat. Her name is Pepper. The cat's name is Carrot because she has black hair. The cat has orange hair. And I will say, I'm really impressed at the artwork of this. I don't know how long it took him to do. I don't know how much we're going to be able to pull out of this, but basically all of the work is going to be licensed under Creative Commons, and you're going to be able to download Hi-Rez roster layers, a layered roster image source file with every posting of his comic. So not only do you get the end result, but you get, my guess is, not all of the things that he did, but you're getting near the end all of the source files and what it took for him to make this comic. Honestly, I'll say this. I don't think there's probably a better way to learn how to do at least his style of graphics rather than looking at his source files. I think you can learn a lot, probably.
Well, I was going to say, first of all, the art is very beautiful. It's a cute little comic. But more importantly, I wonder if he's only using open source tools to make the comic, hence the title.
I will say, that's a really good question there, Cody. I don't know how to answer that, but it wouldn't shock me if he is, only because it's roster images. GIMP is maybe one of the most mature graphic artist roster-based image applications out there. Yes, it doesn't do all of the color stuff that Photoshop does, but it wouldn't shock me at all if he's using that. And he does have a Patreon. That's awesome. I didn't realize that.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, got to support a guy doing a Patreon. And I will say, mentioning Patreon, I am not going to lie. I'm always thinking that I could do a Patreon. I don't know if I should do a Patreon. If you do want to support someone who is doing a Patreon, Element Opie, Mark Cockrell is doing a Patreon. I encourage you, if you do like his show, if you do like his network, if you do like his style, if you do like his morals, if you do like his ethics, if you like anything about Mark, consider hitting him up and supporting him on his Patreon. And I say that because hopefully in 3 or 6 months, he's going to tell me how it's doing, so I should know if I should spend the time to do it.
And by spend the time to do it, he means he's going to have to read 4 paragraphs of text, which will take him about 2 months.
No, what I found out was every time you make a posting, you have to do a little bit of, like if you do a posting from your blog or your YouTube or whatever, you have to do a little bit of extra work on Patreon. And you got to make sure you do it right or else it doesn't work right. So
we'll figure it out.
Okay.
And by we, I mean, we'll just wait for Mark.
Yeah.
No. I'll actually get off my rear end and, well, not this week, next week. I'll look into it. Yeah. But yeah.
Right, but yeah, and I'm trying to get both Mark Cockrell and Kevin O'Brien on the show. It's just a question of scheduling. I work 9 to 5. Cody works 5 a.m. till 12 midnight p.m. You know what I mean? Sometimes. Kevin and Mark both work hard as well. None of us are tech journalists who just sit around in our pajamas all day waiting to talk to people. So we have to literally worry about scheduling and scheduling conflicts so we can get everything done and out there. So hopefully in a couple weeks, hopefully in less than 3 weeks, we'll have at least one of them on. And then very quickly thereafter have another one on. And I'm going to throw this out there. If you think it would be cool to have someone on this show, shoot me a URL and a name. I got no problem in trying to get them on the show. Or if you think I should be on a show, shoot me a URL and a name. And I got no problem with trying to get on another show. I do believe the best way for any podcast to propagate, to grow, is by cross-pollinization, I'll call it, aka real human promos. You know, there's no better promo than mm-hmm. someone real instead of a clip.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm tapped out, Cody. I have no more Raspberry Pi stuff.
For this week. We'll see, though. All right, Dor. I don't have any additional stuff either, so we'll just go ahead and wrap it up. Where can we find you online?
The easiest place is Ponus.com or Google Plus, Stephen McLaughlin, or phonetically, Stephen McLaughlin.
There you go. All right, if you want to send an email to me, you can just send it to Cody@Ponus.com. If you'd like to send an email to the show, send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you'd like to send it in voicemail, please call 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. For the voicemails, please try to limit them to 60 seconds or thereabouts. If they run far too long, just break it up into a couple chunks and call us 2 weeks in a row. Or leave two messages and we'll just play them, you know, separately. That's fine. Please also don't forget to visit the ACF.co, that is the Accessible Computing Foundation, run by our good friend, Admiral Jonathan T. Nato. Fantastic guy. We're running the foundation, to help bring technology to those who would otherwise be left behind, those people with disabilities. For as little as $2 a month, you can become a regular contributor to the ACF, and that money goes straight into projects to benefit that community. So it's a fantastic organization. And every time I see that money come out of my bank account through PayPal, I just know it's going to a great cause. Also, to help the ACF, if you go to sonargnu-linux.com, you can help seed the torrent of Sonar, the special Linux distribution, with a lot of extra accessibility options, which is getting updates all the time. And a lot of good stuff happening with that soon. So definitely, if you can, at least hop on there and help them seed the torrents, help spread the seed. Exactly. It would be a great help. And as always, if you're going to be making any purchases on Amazon, please head over to podnuts.com/Amazon. That's an affiliate link of ours for the network. If you use that link before you make your purchases, you don't pay any extra, but a little portion of your purchase does go to help support the network because we do have costs associated with running these shows. The content is free, but through your purchases you're making already, you can help us keep chugging along. All right, and that is all for this evening. So please, once again, thank you very much for listening. And do not forget that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.